Welcome to episode 18 of the Discovery Files. Today, we're going to interview Eleanor Dowling with the Andover Discovery. Eleanor, do you want to kind of give some background and maybe get to start talking about your side of the Discovery?
Thanks, Scott. So I started working with Azure while I was still completing my honors at UWA. And Paul Smith brought me onto the team. And from there, once they started looking into the lithium side of things, I kind of transitioned into more of a field-based role. And yeah, that's how my first exposure to the industry, I suppose, out of uni started.
So this project's pretty far out in the middle of nowhere, right? So you're not near town or anything like that. What was that like coming out of school and jumping straight into like the field work in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah, interesting. Lots of spin effects, lots of pickles to pull out in the evenings. But Roeburn's not too bad. It's right on the coast. So if we got an afternoon off, we could always go for a swim, which is pretty good going for Australia.
Yeah. That's definitely better than like salt lakes and flies, right? So.
Oh, yeah, big time.
What, I guess, what was that hiring process like? Did you kind of know what you were getting into when it all started, or was it just a new job?
Not at all. So, yeah, it wasn't the traditional hiring group. I got met Paul Smith indirectly at a AIG mentoring program. I was with another lovely person as my mentor, but was sitting across the table from Paul with and just got to chatting. He was talking about Iluka and when he worked there, and so he was telling me all about mineral sands as a second year undergrad. So it was really interesting. And then I ended up doing the vacation program with Iluka through Paul, and so that's how that relationship started. And later on, once I was into my honours, I got a call from Paul being like, you know, we've got this job going up for data entry, needing a bit of help in the office. And so that's how I started at Azure. So it was really no formal introduction or recruiting process. It was purely just by networking, which is quite cool.
I think that's, I've always been amazed with how many jobs I think probably 80 or 90% of my own jobs have been through networking. And sometimes it's out of the blue, and sometimes it's just, you know, chatting with someone over the years, and then finally something comes available. And it's, but I can't emphasize enough how important it is to do networking, join, you know, like young professional organizations and go to the dinners and go to the different things, because you just never know who you'll meet.
Yeah, 100%. I can't speak more highly of it. It's awesome way to meet people and be exposed to new things.
Yeah. So you started off doing data entry. That's always an exciting job, right?
Oh, yeah.
and then did you do that for a while before you went into the field program?
I would say about 6 months. I was digitalizing old WAMEX reports. So it was lots of fun.
Did that help you kind of like maybe familiarize with the geology as you're doing it?
So yeah, a little bit. It was mostly actually focused down on our Leonora Barton project. So it was not quite related, but it was interesting as a uni student to see that side of logging and then how that integrated into database management and then exploration within the area. So that was cool. And I think, it probably gave me a bit of a backing when we started doing the lithium project on data hygiene and that side of things, which is, you know, really important.
Yeah. I think my experience was similar. Like early in my career, I remember looking at digital data that had been poorly digitized and then trying to make any sense of it. And then you go back to the paper logs and it's like, how did they even type this up? This isn't even the same things. Like, how did they even make these mistakes? And you start realizing just how critical it all is. It's often, I still remember like my first job in mining was as like a summer internship up in Alaska. And when I was logging core, and my boss at the time, I think he was joking, but he said, there's three rock types you need to log. There's the footwall waste, the ore zone, and then the hanging wall waste. This one's gray, that one's black, and then the ore is shiny. And it was like, okay. So I remember logging along, and I had no idea what I was doing, and I was not a good core logger in hindsight. But I remember like years later, I came back to work at that project, and I was modeling in this one area, and it's like, yeah, this log's got to be wrong. And I open up the log, and it was me that logged it, and I was like, oh, it is wrong, and it was me. This is so terrible. And it was like, oh, I wonder how many people have mislogged this over the years. Never. And you think about the implications of that, right? So it's a good experience to have, even if it's not super fun to do. Some people love it, but it's not my cup of tea to do digitizing all the time.
No, it can be a bit tedious for me as well. But yeah, credit to those who do it very well.
Yeah, some people it's like they take such pride in it. It's such an art form, and those people are gold on projects.
Yeah.
So then what came next after you started doing the digitizing?
So in tandem to that, I was doing my honors thesis on LCT or lithium cesium tantalum pegmatites. And so that kind of, I was looking at Pilgangoora, Greenbushes, Wadjinara, Tabba Tabba, some of the big ones in WA. So I had, that's kind of where my mind academically was. And at the same time, Tony and Paul and the team were starting to look at different prospects other than nickel in the Andover tenure. So I think when they came to actually going out and having a look on the ground, Paul came to me and was like, oh, would you like to, you know, come out? So that was, pretty cool to go out with Graham and Paul on that first day. It was, it was interesting. We were really just like, we had the ute and we were just going around. We've had a few locations marked and we were just checking them out. Like it was purely first pass, nothing too strategic, but it was, pretty cool. And we came back and we were like, oh, yeah, maybe we'll just, and from that, we kind of, with their help, we kind of kept building the project, and a lot of it from there was all boots on the ground process. So that kind of is how we pulled it together. I've got the assay samples, and from there I could go for the drilling. So it was pretty cool, like very traditional process of discovery, doing that whole groundwork first. And yeah, it's cool.
It's such a good approach to take. And it seems like it's kind of a dying art, like where it feels like people, I think, often overthink things now, and then, do all the computer work up, and then they go straight out to the target instead of just trying to assess, what's it even look like? What's the lay of the land, and how are things in reality versus how we thought they were on the computer? And so it's a good approach. So was it what you imagined when you went to school for geology? Is this like kind of what you wanted to do, or what got you to become a geologist?
I've always been a big outdoors person, love camping, something out in the bush. Volcanoes were fascinating to me, even though I live in WA and there's no active ones, but I thought, that's where I want to be. Going out there and actually having that full bush immersion, just hiking every day, I was like, this is gold. I've hacked the system. I'm very happy with my life. So
I've often been like, they pay you for this? This is amazing. Like, when I first started field geology, it was just like, this is the best thing ever. It's like hiking, but you don't have to follow trails. You just go wherever you want. Yeah. it's amazing. Now that's exciting. And then, I think everybody always wants to have that first field visit, lead to like a discovery, and they kick over a rock and they go, oh, here. But it's never that way, right? It's usually like months of slogging through hot desert, like trying conditions to before you finally have that, moment that turns in time. So what
big time.
Yeah. What was, I guess, like, yeah, how'd that whole process unfold for you?
I suppose it was quite different from the pegmatites I had studied, where you've got you've got that pegmatitic texture. It's a really lovely coarse spodumene. It wasn't like that at Andover. It was a different system. So it's a lot finer grained, and that was a lot harder to pick in outcrop, which was challenging. But I think that kind of, as the team, I think credit to the team and all the different approaches, that's how I think we went outside the box, and we thought, like, oh, although it doesn't look like it should from other deposits, it had the right sort of chemistry from a geophysical standpoint. And then once we'd actually put it and got assays back, it was like, okay, no, we're definitely onto something here. It was,
and maybe that's why it wasn't discovered earlier, right? As if it had been an obvious, typical pegmatite, then people might have been looking at it for lithium. And so it's, I often think about how many ore deposits are atypical, and it's like you can go years with people not, like, if they haven't thought outside the box, they could be sitting right on top of this fantastic property and just never looked at it and been like, well, I guess maybe it's got the right ingredients. Maybe we should assay this.
Yeah, big time. Big time. And I think the lithium, hard rock lithium space is one of those really unexplored areas because historically hasn't been of demand. So I think it's got a lot of that to it, which is exciting.
Yeah, it's It's like, you know, I was reading a thing about the age of exploration in cartography. You know, it's essentially over, right? There's like nothing left to, like, there's no coastlines left that we don't know about, right? And, you know, there might be new islands that show up, but there's not that race to map the world, right? But I look at like the number of areas in geology that are completely unexplored, and then there's less and less people doing field work. So it's like I kind of go back to, it feels like everybody's said, oh yeah, there's no big discoveries to be found, you know, all that's been discovered already. And I kind of look at this as a new age of opportunity, because if everybody's saying that, the opportunities are out there for the people that can look at things differently, right? So
Oh,
it's pretty
100%.
exciting.
Yeah.
So when you got the first assays back, was it like, oh yeah, slam dunk, you know, we know exactly, or was it kind of like, eh, maybe there's a hint of this and a hint of that?
Yeah, I think it was like we had a few like really big screamers, and we were like, wow, okay, they're good. And then we had some which were still good sort of indicators, like in the 1, 1.5, 2% sort of lithium range. So yeah, lithia. But yeah, and then the 3 and the 4s were a bit more rare, but we could see that there was a trend and maybe a bit of clustering. So maybe it was a sampling bias, or yeah. So we were quite interested still. And then we were looking at other variables surrounding that, such as density and grain size, and we'll kind of just and maybe other elements, like if it was close to a contact, there might have been a bit more iron contamination, and then that might have swung it. But yeah, from there, I think Josh, who might be coming on here later, he was phenomenal in that aspect, really pulling the multivariate data together, and from that untangling the geochemistry there, and that we could then refine our approach of the mapping. You know, by the end, when we were really, you know, getting it to a good spot where we're like, okay, we need to drill this, I think it was a lot easier to see in the field because we, you know, really thought about it, and it hadn't just been like, oh yeah, success, let's drill that. It was a more, yeah, okay, let's keep getting more information here and keep putting it together. From that, yeah, the size of this system was quite profound. I think that was a big push for really building this out, because I think it was one of we come back, it was in December, so it was hot. It was like 90% humidity up in the 50s. We got back to our little shed, no air con. It was just yeah,
Oh.
just hot, as you can imagine. And we sat down at the Toughbook and kind of put it up on a GIS and just used that measurement tool, and we're like, oh, hold on a minute, this is like a maybe a 4K strike length, but hold on a minute, this is actually huge. And from there, yeah, it really just went bonanza.
It's really interesting, the perspective you get when you're in the field is often you're so focused on the outcrop in front of you. You start like, you know, you don't always think about the scale of the things around. And so I've always found that when I always like doing the camp type jobs where you're not traveling a long distance back to like a hotel or something, you're somewhere nearby, because then you can kind of think about it and then you can plan the next day and then you can be like, and so it always to me gave perspective, you know, like I started off doing paper mapping. And so, you know, you'd go back to the table and you'd be coloring in your map and you'd be thinking about what it might mean. And I think that process is really underrated, where it's like digesting the facts that you see, right? And it's and also you guys have a small team, right? There's three of you out there at this time, is that right? Or four?
Yeah, there was 3 geos doing the project. There was 2 other guys also in the shed handling the nickel project, which at the time was still in full swing. And then yeah, a couple fieldies. So it was quite small.
Yeah. And quite a variety of experience too, because not every project has like a good like IOGAS hand or, you know, someone that's good at GIS. And so you can have projects where a lot of people, especially mapping, have very similar skill sets. And I've always found that small team with a lot of variety can go a long ways, because you're not reproducing each other's work, you're doing kind of distinctly different work and then collaborating to try to put it together on what it means. And so I find that dynamic's really a fun one.
Yeah, it is cool.
So yeah, so you all realize that it's 5 kilometer strike length, and then all of a sudden it's like, I'm sure there's a worry of, well, if we communicate this to the bosses too soon and we're wrong, they're going to be like, what do you mean you were wrong? We told the board about this. So
Yeah.
how did that process go? Is it a lot of deliberation on on exactly like, well, let's confirm this first and let's go out in the field and check, or how'd that go?
Oh, well, I think Paul Smith, he was kind of our buffer between upper management and the site team. So he helped frame things before anything went further. So yeah, he was great in being like, okay, well, maybe we need to, you know, check ABC. And, but yeah, as from my perspective, I was very, very hesitant. I was like, oh no, I don't want to like start saying, oh, this is awesome, like this is huge, in case it all just collapsed and it was like some shallow little trickle, or I don't know. But yeah. It was pretty nerve-wracking. Definitely, it was very surreal. Didn't 100% did not expect to find anything huge on my first job. It felt like a dream.
And especially like an atypical system, right? You know, because you'd done all this study work in your honors program looking at probably more typical systems. And so, you know, you have an idea of what those look like. And then when you find something atypical, there's a lot of questions on, well, what's the same and what's different? You know, it's like, if it's just grain size, that's one thing, but what else is different? It must have been a cool process to go through.
Yeah, 100%. I think in my further career, like I think, or just frame of mind for geological systems, it's quite interesting in that, you know, things aren't the textbook. I think it's definitely broadened my mind, and like, you know, it doesn't have to fit these criteria to be potentially economic. You know, there is more, and it's good to be a bit open-minded when coming to these new deposits.
Yeah, it's all the I don't know. It's there's so many things that go into every new discovery, and in hindsight, they always make perfect sense and everything. Oh yeah, all the dots lined up and it was great.
Yeah.
And but there's so much like sleuthing at the time, or you're really just like reading into things and researching, and it's like, you know, even things like, okay, well, how are we going to extract this, right? It's just like, you know, is there, what's the processing going to look like? Is it going to be very different because of the grain size differences? You know, how does all of that work?
Yeah, and that's quite interesting. I think now that we've been moving more into project delivery, that is really becoming quite paramount, and it's interesting to see the different departments and how they're tackling those challenges. It's interesting, very interesting.
Yeah, and so now I imagine there's some infrastructure on the site, because you guys are not that far away from that delivery side. So is it pretty weird to see the area that you just used to go walk around and map, and, you know, like everything's pretty empty? There's not a lot of people nearby, right? Is it weird to see all of a sudden like a little town kind of cropping up, as it were?
Yeah, it's crazy. With the pit, when you go out now and you can see, well, you can't see, but like using maps where the pit's going to be, and kind of you getting the scale for these things, and just kind of imagining, it's like, wow, okay, I see like how this is going to be, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So what was your experience like when you first started mapping? Did you feel like you kind of knew what you're doing, or did you, I know like for me, it was like, My first job out of school, I just felt like I had no clue what I was doing. And I felt like I'd wasted a bunch of money on a degree. And it took a while for me to settle down and be like, no, I actually do know a lot more than I'm giving myself credit for. Was it like that for you too? Or what was your initial response on like heading out there and just starting a map?
Yeah, I mean, there was lots of, you know, a lot of nerves. It was, you always come back after and you'd, you know, type up things like, oh, what is a pegging type? Just even though you knew, it was just like, no, do I know? You know, it was a lot of second guessing yourself and just needing to reassure, myself, which is, I think, part of the process in building confidence in those skills. But I think just talking, I had a lot of friends at the time, geologists, talking to them and kind of, you know, hearing their stories and just fleshing out ideas and confirming, you know, am I using this compass correctly? But those sort of silly questions, like having someone you feel like you go to and just bounce ideas off was so important, and it made you feel much more confident.
Yeah, and that's as you said, like I think probably 90% of the time, you know, but it's just that doubt, right? Because you're early on and you're like, well, do I really know? Do I just think I know?
Yeah.
It's really helpful having and it goes back to the whole networking thing. There's some folks that I went to school with that I'm still friends with and still work in industry. And it's like, it's there's a lot of advantage to that, you know, like keeping those contacts going. And, you know, obviously you have to be careful about, you don't talk about confidential things, but there's so many other things you can talk about in terms of like the geology of things to make sure that you're going in the right direction and, you know, like just working out ideas, right? And so.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. What was there anything that was vastly different than you thought it would be in school?
I suppose it was actually quite unique. I'd done a bit of field work in Kalgoorlie and around Kambalda, and, you know, we'd stop at an outcrop and it was rubble, like there was barely anything. But, and then I expected the same being in Nike and Cratton and Pilbara. I thought, oh, it's going to all be very weathered. But Andover's quite unique. It was actually beautiful outcrops and not much cover or anything like that. And even in our drill core, you know, we'll get maybe 2 to 5 meters. Like it's fresh, wow, pretty much from surface. Beautiful. So I think that was quite a pleasant surprise. I was like, wow, okay. Yeah. So it's a bit more dynamic than you think Australian can go ancient. But yeah, that was awesome and refreshing because, yeah, I was like, oh, okay, I can see the pledge clay. So I can actually see what the minerals are. Like it's not all altered. So that was really great.
I remember, like, I worked down at St. Ives and I went out there, like, at the very beginning. And I remember someone being like, oh, yeah, there's, if I remember right, it's like 30 to 60 meters of sand. And it's just like, really? And it was like, yeah, 95% of it's under either saprolite or alluvium and other types of cover. And I remember being like so out of my depth because in the United States, all of the rocks I'd ever worked on were outcropping with, you know, 80, 90% outcrop in some places. You know, it's very, very uncommon to find so much cover. And I just remember like talking to the senior geo when I first started being like, is there any projects that have outcrop that I could go to? And he's like, yeah, I think over here. And it turns out everybody was shying away from it because they were used to working in not outcropping areas. And I was like, oh, really? Okay, I feel more comfortable with this.
Yeah.
But it's, and I remember like we went on a trip somewhere and there was a komatiite flow that you could actually see, like the paleo surface was essentially like almost intact, you know, like after 2.7 billion years or whatever. And, you know, you could see where this like flow had gone. And I just remember being like, this is the craziest thing to have, you know, because again, most of the stuff I'd worked in the US was, you know, 15 million to like 130 million years old, right? So it's like, you know, huge difference in time. And it just was like, this is still this fresh after 2.7 billion years? That's so wild.
Yeah. Wow.
It's
phenomenal
so fun
when that happens. Yeah.
Yeah. It's and it's rare, right? Like there's obviously, I think as the future goes by, more and more of our discovery is going to be undercover, right? And it's like, just because, you know, I figure people have walked over the things, unless it's for commodities that are either newly economic or newly in demand that never were, you know, I figure for the things that have been sought after, it's probably going to be working undercover in the future. Yeah. It's enjoyable when you have the opportunities to work on projects that aren't. Where have we left out in the chronology of things that would be worth revisiting?
I suppose quite an interesting and kind of, I think for me, it was the moment that really connected what I was doing to maybe the company and just business. It was, before we started drilling, exploration manager came to site and he was kind of talking through what the next year's process would be and, you know, bringing up like six rigs from two that we were doing for the nickel drill out. Yeah. So all the rigs that were going to come to site, how much that would actually cost, you know, how much capital the company had. And then, you know, if it didn't work, we'd be bankrupt, basically, is kind of what he was saying. You know, we're going to throw the kitchen sink at this project and, you know, it's a make or break for the company. Thankfully, it was a make, but yeah. I remember sitting there being like, I might not have a job in 6 months. That was pretty surreal.
I have been there too. Yeah. It's so strange. And it makes sense because the alternative is sitting on your cash, not doing anything with it, and then slowly using it on salaries. So, but I just remember like some of the projects where they're like, all right, you know, we've got 3.5 months of work ahead of us and we're going to be flat out for 3.5 months. And then we'll see if we can raise more after that, but we might just be out of money. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, like, ah. Should I look for another job or should I just, oh, no. Like, don't look for another job. Just stick with this one. You know, we'll be fine. And it's like, yeah. It doesn't sound fine. It really doesn't sound fine.
No, it's unsettling, but immensely exciting, I guess.
Yeah. And I think that's something that it's been pretty common with most of the discoveries, like that either I know people involved personally or people we've interviewed, but it's like a lot of them were kind of on the edge. And it's, you know, if they didn't raise money, it was like, all right, well, the only person that's going to still have a job is the CEO and everybody else is going to, you know, go away. Yeah. And it's, which is hard because then you, you know, you lose people who have the talent to and the experience on the project. Yeah. So it's such a weird mix, isn't it? Like that constant uncertainty of the junior, you know, will we have enough money for assays after we complete this drilling?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big shift, isn't it?
Yeah. So how did you deal with that? Was it difficult for you or was it like, did it add to your stress levels every day when you got back from the field?
I think it motivated us. I remember, I think it was shortly after that, I was on site for a week with my Conrad. Thank you. He was an excellent geologist at the time with us, and it was a week, and we got 2,000 rock chip samples, you know, like, and Conrad loved to get these like big Bundys. So we had our absolute chockers in our little hiking bags, trekking like a few k's a day, just like back to the car, back out. And I think it just spurred us. Like we just were, you know, we were excited. We were like, well, we've got to make this work, don't we? To help delineate the area and really get widen the project scope, which it did. It just kept giving the area, which was, yeah, really cool to see. And I think it gave, once we actually started drilling and, you know, we did hit it in our first hole, it was like, okay, well, this is really exciting. And I think from there, we took more of a logging standpoint. The rock chip sampling was more in the background, and just to when we had the people, because that then became the critical point, having enough people to man all the rigs and also to keep the sampling in the background. So that was interesting.
It's a real sense of like to me, that's always been a combination of, you feel real purpose because you know what you're doing matters, right? So you're like, oh, okay, if I can expand, you know, the footprint by 200 meters, that's a huge amount of dollars in the ground. And but also like, it gives you like real motivation, right? Where it's just like, my future paycheck depends on what I'm doing right now being high quality and delivered in a time frame where it matters. It's not for everybody. I've seen a lot of people really not enjoy the high pressure of that, you know, you have to deliver, like you don't have another option. And so I've seen people not handle it well. And then I've seen other people that just thrive in it. It's a very unique experience.
Oh, big time.
Yeah. What was, I guess, like, was the team getting more and more excited as things were going, or did it kind of have like peaks and valleys, you know, where you'd build up to delivering a certain thing and then it would kind of taper off and everybody would kind of get somber and then get exciting again? Or was it all just going upwards?
But from my experience, it was just kept building new challenges. You know, it was, once we started drilling, it was very different information that we're receiving from the core, like different. So we had to, you know, change our mind again about, you know, the system and how it was working and alteration, and it was stuff we weren't seeing at surface, so that was really quite exciting. And then the mineralogy was also a bit fresher and a bit different because, you know, minerals which might have been weathered away at surface were preserved, so that was really cool. So that technically was quite juicy, and yeah, something you could really sink your teeth into. And then I had a bit more exposure to like people management. I was kind of, as because of my thesis, I was tasked with training people when they came to site on what pegmatites were, because we had a lot of, you know, gold people and people from different geological backgrounds. As you know, I think I was 23, 22, training these people, I was like, who were much more experienced and older than I was. That was quite a lot, but it was
pretty
cool.
Weird
to
feeling.
Felt a bit like an imposter sometimes, but it was ultimately very rewarding, and I think helped build my confidence just as a GA, but also as a professional.
It's a strange thing to be so young and to be so like, where you're essentially the site expert at this point, right? And it goes back to like, you know, because I used to worry about that as well, like a lot when I was like a younger GA. Still happens to me now, but it's like where I go, I know there's people that know more about this. Why don't they bring them in? And it's just like, and then it's like, well, you're here now. So do what you can.
Yeah.
It's like, and so then I'd be like, well, I know I have things to teach them, so I guess that's good. It just might not be as much as if they brought in some consultant that knew it all. It's like humbling, right? Like, I guess you could take it two ways. You could either take it as an ego boost, or you could take it as humbling. Like, it seems like there's not much in the middle sometimes.
Yeah, I think it was, credit to seniors for, you know, trusting me to do that. But also, it wasn't, we kept, finding, you know, little seminars. I think UWA did one around the time, and they sent all the geos to it. So it was really interesting, like, information, learning sort of focused environment for the geos. So that was, I think, really helped everyone, and everyone was like thirsty for knowledge. We had a really young team, so they were, it's awesome. We still catch up to this day, even though a lot of people have left and onto new things. Yeah. But
that's the way, right? It's like people will always find whatever the unique situation is for that works for them. I've never been offended when people have left projects. I know some people get really upset about it, and I've always been like, clearly this is not the right thing for them at this time in their lives. So, you know, they're looking for something that's better. That's okay.
yeah. Gotta keep evolving.
Yeah, I guess how hard was it for the people with like gold experience to just digest what it was to now be looking for lithium?
It was cool. Like, it was definitely, you know, moving away from sulfides. It was new elements and minerals, lots of new information, different processes of concentration, which were to get your head around. But there was also shared factors. You got an orthomagmatic system, so it's not too different in basic principles. So it was just, they definitely brought new perspectives, which I think actually aided the project thinking in new ways. And, you know, I think that was the brilliance of it, you know, having all those different perspectives. You could be like, oh, maybe actually this is a better way to look at it, or maybe we could look at it that way, and then you see more, and I don't know, it builds a story better than just having one traditional pegmatite geologist, you know. It's I think that was paramount.
That's what I've always been really interested in as I've worked at like different projects is you know, there's a trap in seeing what you've seen elsewhere everywhere. So there's certainly like there can be a pitfall there. But I've also been amazed with how many similarities there are, because I've gone and looked at porphyry systems versus epithermal systems versus, or, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, there's a lot that's different, but the geological processes can actually be kind of related. And so I find it, I don't know, I've always really enjoyed going and looking at deposit styles that are so different than anything I've worked in, because you'll be like, all of a sudden, like, oh, so fractures matter a lot in this system, but in a totally different way than they matter in that system, but they're still important. So it's interesting stuff. It's, I've enjoyed that. And the same thing I've enjoyed when you have people with like a variety of experiences working on a project, because it gives you some new perspectives that you might not consider otherwise. So it's fun. Is there anything else like in the chronology that you think might be interested? The editing process.
I'm trying to think. I suppose for me, those were the big parts, you know, starting the program, but just, Aaron and Paul and Graham and Conrad, and just starting out in the field and really, you know, building that mapping project. And then from there, integrating the drilling data and how that kind of fed into connecting the pegmatites and actually building out how they looked and how they interacted with each other, because there was a few different lineaments. So we were, you know, it was a lot of surface sort of trying to figure out, like, oh, is there a fault there? Or it was like, you know, to actually then have that 3D data to support what was actually happening was quite interesting. And I did get a bit of time in the Perth office to do some of the modeling, which was really exciting to see how that side of the system works, and how, you know, those brilliant people that are able to use, you know, Micromine and Leapfrog in that way was really cool. And I don't know, that for me, that was really quite exciting, just to see. I think I feel very, very lucky that I've had that chance to go from, you know, one, we're looking at nickel before then, to then finding something and then going to the drill out, and now to eventually mining it. It's really cool just to see that whole process so early on in my career. I feel very fortunate.
Yeah, no, that's like, you know, the whole a lot of my experience of what jobs I've gotten is like pure luck, where like we were talking earlier, it's like, it's not like I sat there and chose which companies I wanted to go work at so much as it's like who's hiring and who has this. And I was like, okay. And then you just they happen to have a good project and then, they make a discovery and it's like, and I go, how I'm always amazed by how much luck factors into things, where it's just like, you could have, because you graduated school, so this was like you said it was 20, what year, 20,
2020.
yeah, so like right
And
in the
then,
middle of COVID too. What a crazy time.
that was another experience. I think that
yeah
made us just as eager to get out, and actually into the field from just sitting at the computers for a year. That was cool.
oh yeah that's Yeah, there's a lot of, and so yeah, so 2020, like gold was still doing pretty decent, so you could have just as easily landed a job in gold, and this project wouldn't have had all of the knowledge that you brought to it, and so it's, which is kind of, again, strange to think about being right out of school and yet you're still contributing. And I think a lot of people don't realize just how much they can contribute right out of school, right? Where it's just like, there's a lot of knowledge that is actually really directly applicable, and I think people undersell their own value sometimes.
Oh, big
It's
time.
yeah, and it's easy to, yeah, I think that's, it's easier to do it that way than to, yeah, I don't know, like, yeah, I just think about so many things, like where over the years I've been like, I have no idea what this is, and it's, and then I just have to remind myself, it's like, yeah, no, I might not know this fact, but what I'm bringing to the table is a way of thinking about things scientifically and using other experience to guide my decisions. So yes, I might not know this thing, but I know how to find out.
100%. I think that's where the excitement is too. You're tasked with something, you're like, oh, I have no idea what that is. But using your skills and then reaching some sort of maybe hypothesis, and you're like, oh, wait a minute, this could have legs, and see where that goes and keep
Yeah.
testing it. Yeah, that's awesome. That's what geology is for me. It's exciting.
Yeah, I guess in that regard, did the 3D models look kind of like how you pictured it in your mind? Like, because a lot of people are building up a mental image of what they think the deposit looks like. And then sometimes I know in my experience, like when I finally got to look at things in 3D, it was like, oh, that's not how I imagined it at all.
Yeah, no, compared to early days in the field when we were standing there with a notepad, sketching these like zoned pegmatites, which were the more classical model. And, that's kind of what we were thinking. And we're like, oh, maybe, there's like a, I don't know, a raft here or something. Compared to what it actually looks like is vastly different. And so, yeah, it's cool to see that. Interesting, very different. Yeah.
Yeah, it's I've always just kind of found that just fascinating. And then you almost always have things where you start looking at something you've logged or some geochemical thing in 3D and going, whoa, why is this going on over here? And then you start trying to, like, it brings you back to like asking even more questions. And then it's like, I need to go back to the field and I need to see if I can see that, And
Yes.
yeah, I've always loved that feedback loop, which I think a lot of bigger companies, a lot of people lose out on, is they might only do core logging as opposed to core logging, field mapping, looking at the model, looking at the resource estimate. When you work for a smaller company, you do a lot of things, right? Including, like I always joke around about, like the more valuable stuff, like, janitorial stuff, like, oh, we clean out the core shed, we, got all the dust out. But it's like you do everything, right? And it's, and so I've always found that really valuable to, helping your understanding by seeing all the other facets.
Yeah, that is it.
What about the whole process did you dislike the most, if that's okay to talk about? You don't have to talk about like people and everything, be like, oh, Paul.
It's like, well, we usually sweat through our clothes about 10 a.m. just because of the humidity. We'd have to come back, shower before we started logging. Otherwise, it was deathly cold in front of the aircon. Or so, yeah, that wasn't as pleasant, I suppose. I mean, the uncertainty could be a bit unsettling. Like now, in hindsight, it's always like, oh yeah, it was fun, it was adventurous. But at the time, it was a bit of stress there, for sure. But I think mitigating that was just having conversations and, airing your worries. To your management, if you were like, oh, Paul was a big help in that, and he was a very people person, so he could see when you were a bit stressed, and he really did reach out, and credit to him in that aspect. Yeah, I suppose that was hard, not really knowing because and I felt I was a bit off the beaten track. A lot of graduates went into, you know, programs and at big companies, but I went into a junior, so I was, there was a bit of uncertainty there as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I think end of the day, you know, it builds your life story. So no, I wouldn't change anything. But yeah, they were more challenging. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember, you know, like some of the early companies I worked for, you know, like the power getting shut off because, you know, so they didn't have enough money to pay the power bill and being like,
oh, wow.
are we gonna get paid? Like, I hope we get paid. What happens if we don't get paid?
It's
like,
yeah.
And then talking to like friends of mine that didn't get paid. And, you know, like one person went like 8 months without getting paid, but they were living like at the company's site. So they're like, well, I had food and water, so I didn't really care. But yeah, it was pretty weird to not get paid.
That would be wild.
And it's always, you know, it's just perspective, right? It's all the different things that some people like that and some people hate it. And it's, yeah. And I always think about just how different my career would have been if I'd gone straight into, because, you know, like getting ready to graduate, I'd interviewed for all these companies and I interviewed for like with the two biggest companies in the area at the time. And one of them, I got a callback a year. No, it was actually 11 months later after I did an interview. 11 months later, they called me and said, oh, yeah, we'd like to offer you the job. And I was like, I could have like gotten a job and changed jobs in this much time.
That's insane.
Yeah. And it was like, and so I just think about, you know, in many ways, it was really fortunate that I got that job at this company and that someone was willing to take a risk on me. And it was, but it was so weird being like the only geo. There's all these things that you learn. Like, I guess you learn how to learn, right? Like when you're with a small company, like, you know, there's not someone that has the answers. Like you have to, as a team or individually, figure out an answer to almost everything, right?
Yeah, big time.
And then I guess, what have you learned that's like kind of maybe guided your career? I mean, obviously you're still working there. So it's, you know, your career is progressing as the mind is changing, right? Or is becoming developed. But like, I guess, what are some lessons that you've taken away that you really value?
I suppose, yeah, I've had a few different managers now. And I think if that's the direction I'm going to take, seeing those different managerial styles is quite interesting. Yeah, I've had some beautiful people who've really put their team forward. I think similar to your experience with that manager who push you for training and then use that training within the company. I've had a few like that, and it's refreshing to see that style. And I think the performance of the workers and the culture when you have people that are supporting the team, it's amazing, I think. And people thrive, and you get better quality work. So that's been really cool to see. And then I suppose been quite interesting to see the different departments, like environment, heritage, mining, and to see how they all influence us, the project. Because, you know, from a geology point of view, we're like, oh yeah, we've got this awesome thing and it's gonna be awesome, and but then you need all those different disciplines to really actually make it something that is producing. And that's pretty cool to see, because I think at the beginning when I was out in the field, wasn't even on my mind, you know, thinking about, oh, how close is this to a port, or are there endemic species in the area? You know, that wasn't on my horizon. But now, you know, it's part of the thought process. So that's been really cool. I suppose
it's such a change from that early stage project to like once something gets developed. Yeah, there's just so many things that, like, early on in my career, like, I had no idea, you know, and like, you know, we're logging like geotech, but in a format later, I find out that there's not at all usable by geotechnical engineers. Yeah. Well, we didn't know any better. So we're doing what we knew. And it was like, all right.
Yeah.
So and I've always really valued when you get those professionals that come on a project and, like, you know, add a new dimension to it. And you're like, you start talking about like, how do you, you know, what things are impacting recoveries? And it's like, oh, I had no idea about that. And I guess maybe we could log this so that they'll be able to, you know, model recoveries like down the road, and then they can actually plan how they're going to put things through a plant. And you go, oh, we had no idea, you know, when we were first looking at this, you know, like what might be, you don't even know those things are an issue.
Yeah. 100%. Geotech was over my head, I think, for the first 800 holes.
Yeah. And it's hard habits to unlearn sometimes, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then I've always enjoyed if you have like a good relationship with like the modelers and like both geomodelers and resource estimators, where it's like, what features do they need in order to do their work better? Because oftentimes when I know when I was like mapping or modeling or mapping or logging early on, I just had no idea how the data was used. And so I was like, well, I think these things are important when I look at this rock. And so I would write them down. And then it's like, yeah, that's totally useless to us. We can't model anything off of that. And I was like, oh, well, that sucks. What can you model off of? And then it'd be something you're like, oh, I didn't even think about, you know, like quantifying grain size, right? Or whatever. Right? It's like, there's all these things where it's like, yeah, I didn't even cross my mind.
You know? Yeah, so. That's been my experience. It's been really interesting to see what they need. I think we're doing point load testing and all that, and we're like, oh well, this could have actually benefited if we'd started it, X holes ago. It could have been really good. Interesting.
No, it's I don't know. It's like there's so many fun phases throughout mining that it's just. It never gets old, right? It's always just something different and something new. And it's, and then I guess, has there come a point, because there's not very many of these pegmatite systems that are like Andover, right? So this is kind of a little bit of a standalone. So has there come a point where you are starting to realize that you might actually know more about the system than what you read about in the literature? Or are you still not quite there yet?
Still not quite there yet. I think there's still some great papers coming out, which are more like our system, anatectic systems. So I think Josh is probably your best. He might be above the literature. He's an absolute brainiac. But yeah, I'm still learning and enjoying.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Is I hope to never stop learning. It's like there's so much to learn.
100%.
And then I guess, is there anything that I've like not touched on that you'd really like to cover? Because that's often the way, right? Is there's things where you have a standout memory and it's like, and then, just in the course of it, I've forgotten to ask anything about it.
No, I think I think I've covered a lot of my experience and in the discovery. It's been awesome to have the opportunity and platform to talk to you about it.
I really appreciate you coming on the show. And then I guess, what's your favorite thing of everything in hindsight? What's your favorite thing about this discovery or your involvement in it?
I'd say it was being in the field, those long days under the sun, just seeing the countryside change with all the wildflowers and just being immersed in it. And then, all the fresh pegmatite at surface. I think that visual will always be in my mind. And everything else is just extra and bonus.
Yep. It's hard to believe we get paid to do this stuff.
How grateful.
Yeah. No, that's, I don't know. I often think about that where it's, I think my wife was asking me, she's like, oh, would you tell the kids to, to become geologists or not? And I've never really pushed them because my oldest is 16 and I've always talked about geology, but I've never pushed him into it. But I'm like, I was kind of like, well, I'm not sure. And she's like, oh, come on. Would you have done it any other way? And I was like, yeah, absolutely not. I love it. I just absolutely love geology and I love climbing to these like ridge tops and looking out across the world. And you're like, I don't even know if anybody's ever stood on this point before. It might've been 10,000 years before the last human was here. And I was like, and I've had so many moments in my career where I've just like been like, yeah, I cannot believe I'm paid for this. This is the stuff that we should have to pay for.
100%. It's phenomenal.
And I think that's what the industry needs more of is people who are in it because they love it. And I guess like what I know you said what drew you into geology, but what drew you into exploration geology? Was there anything that made you focus specifically on that?
I suppose the beginning of uni, I wasn't really sure. I was just enjoying the rocks and trying to figure it out. In 2019, I went on the Nexus program, that's where it is, in South Australia with Richard Lilley. It's so it's looking at exploration undercover. A lot of it's in South Australia, but it's a free program. I think it was 3 weeks, and it was just total immersion within exploration geology. So I got a real feeling for what that is and what that means, which I didn't get in undergrad. And to to see that, I was like, actually no, this is where my passion is, I think, in exploration. And also using all these cool tools, which didn't have to use with Andover, but in the examples we looked at, looking undercover, and that was an eye opener for me. So I think from there, kind of filled in that the exploration geology is where I wanted to be. Doesn't mean I'm against mining. I think I haven't really had exposure there, so you can't say you don't like something unless you try it. Yeah. But for me, exploration's been super exciting and a bit unknown, which I think I enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah, I just started reading a book called The Explorer's Gene and by Alex Hutchinson. And I've been really enjoying like reading it because it's actually talking about there appears to be a genetic difference in people who want to. It's almost like you get like a psychological reward for pushing your boundary of knowledge and for going into a new area. And so it's not just like physically going in new areas, but like, you know, mentally exploring new aspects and things. But I've just been really enjoying listening to it because I've realized how much I love exploration. And I enjoy it too. And I enjoy, you know, dealing with processing and all those. They're wonderful intellectual challenges, but there's very little that's as enjoyable as going and standing on somewhere new and going, what is this?
Yeah. Did you always know that you wanted to be in exploration?
Yeah, actually. Well, not always. I had really poor grades coming out of high school because I was not planning to go to college. And so when I started working and I realized that I didn't want to work minimum wage for the rest of my life. So I went to a junior college and I started taking classes and I just took all these just different classes to see what I liked. And so I took like anthropology and auto shop and all these other things and you know, history and biology and all this. And I was like, oh, and then I took a geology class and I really liked it. And the guy had done some exploration geology, some mine geology, and a lot of geology for like the US Forest Service. And he had this whole class talking about just exploration geology, and we would go on field trips to mines and volcanoes, and like I never got to see an active volcano, but like you know, like recently deceased volcanoes. And I just remember like he had this class on exploration and talking about new discoveries and how they were done. And I still remember like the visual of going up to him and being like, how do I get a job in this? And this is like 2001. And he's like, well, unless you change the price of gold, you're not going to get a job in this. And so then I was like, all right, well, where do I start? And so I started working for his old company. He'd sold to a guy who was a former exploration geo that during the gold drawback at that point had started doing like septic system design was like, you know, the bread and butter for getting by because it was, and he started teaching me geology and like, you know, he had all these amazing stories about exploration. And so before I even went to like four year university, I was like, I knew exactly what I was going to do. I was like, I'm going to do exploration. I want to fly in helicopters and I want to do all these things. And it was like, this is amazing. And I'm still friends with my professor passed away, but I'm still friends with the guy that hired me. And we've talked about over the years, it is everything I'd hoped it would be and more, you know, like I've seen more things than I even had known could exist. And I was like, this is amazing.
Such a cool job.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. It's like, it doesn't get old. So
yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Then I guess I try to ask some profound question at the end and I can't think of anything at the moment. Maybe what I'll ask is, what advice do you have for other people coming out of school and looking at their first job and trying to understand what they want to do?
I think talk to people, you know, you're limited by your own experience. So talk to other people and expand and see what they've done. And it doesn't always have to be for you, but it's interesting. Yeah, reading as well. I think more information gives yourself a better chance to pick your path and gives you more decisions. So I think that's for me has been a big takeaway from this experience.
That's great, great advice. So thank you again for doing this. Digging deep where the stories hide, through the hills and the mountains wide. Pickaxe swing and the earth unfolds, chasing dreams in the dirt and gold. Geology calling under our feet, secrets are buried in the rock and heat.
with a heart full of wonder and a map in hand, exploring the treasures of this great land.